Welcome to another episode of For the Medical Record.
I'm Christy Slobogan.
And I am Antoine Johnson. We have with us today Dr. Wendy C. Shields, who is a senior scientist in the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins. She's also affiliated in the Center for Indigenous Health and the Center for Injury Research and Policy, which you will hear a lot more about later in this episode. And we also have with us Alexander Perry, who is a graduate student at Johns Hopkins in the Department of the History of Medicine. Alex's dissertation charts how the voluntary safety system of education markets for quote-unquote safe goods and non-state product testing sought to protect citizen consumers from injuries and its long-term effects on public health and federal regulation.
So obviously you can see that the connection between these two wonderful scholars is that they both work on injuries.
Yes.
And we brought them to For the Medical Record to speak about a conference that is coming up in March 2024. And that conference is Rethinking Injuries, Interdisciplinary Approaches to Harm, Safety, and Society. And I won't spoil too much now because we talk about the conference a lot in the episode, but this is a hybrid conference that any listeners can attend either in person or online.
Taking place from March 7th to 9th.
Yep. And so this event will bring together scholars, researchers, and policymakers from the humanities, social sciences, public health, and medicine to chart how individuals and communities live with and make meaning out of injuries.
So enjoy the episode. Catch you on the flip side.
Alex and Wendy, thank you so much for joining us in For the Medical Record on our podcast. Just to start us off, could you both just introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about yourselves, what you're doing here at Hopkins, how you were trained, and what you work on?
Okay, I'll go first. I'm Wendy. I'm a faculty member at the Johns Hopkins Center for Injury Research and Policy, where I've worked for more than 20 years. So I research a whole lot of different things about intentional and unintentional injuries. And sometimes I have the pleasure of working with Alex as well.
And I'm Alex. I'm a PhD candidate and historian of public health with the Johns Hopkins History of Science, Technology, and Medicine program. I work primarily on home injuries and consumer product safety in the U.S. From 1920 to 1980. And my dissertation focuses on voluntary safety measures. So things like safety education, markets for safe appliances, consumer product testing, and the ways that both businesses and nonprofits become involved in trying to prevent accidents and injuries in the period that I'm looking at, and then projecting forward to the lineages of those things up to the present.
Nice. Thank you both. So we've invited you here to speak about a conference coming up in March of 2024 called, quote, Rethinking Injuries, Interdisciplinary Approaches to Harm, Safety, and Society, end quote. Could you give us a bit of information about this event?
Yeah, so I guess just by way of introduction, first off, the conference is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. So we're trying to basically bring together a lot of different kinds of folks, people in the humanities, social sciences, folks in medical practice, as well as public health practitioners and policymakers to talk about injuries and sort of share methods and approaches and conclusions that people have drawn from a variety of different fields. Some other co-sponsors for the event, the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg Center for Injury Research and Policy, which Wendy has already indicated that she belongs to, is going to be a participant here. The Alexander Grass Humanities Institute, Center for Medical Humanities and Social Medicine at Hopkins, and the Society for the Social History of Medicine, just to name the current co-sponsors. So really trying to cast a pretty broad net here. And the organizing committee includes myself, Wendy, and Christy, as well as my advisor, Graham Mooney, at the History of Medicine Department, Arwen Moen, who's a professor of history at the University of Delaware, and Ira Filipacki, who's an associate lecturer of English literature and linguistics at American College of Greece, Durrey. So we're really excited about this event. In terms of some of its major goals, we think of this as a chance for researchers across the humanities, social sciences, and public health to come together again to sort of think about different methods and approaches to injuries and the various results that people have drawn while thinking about them. And the conference originally comes out of a longer-term collaboration between myself, Graham, the History of Medicine Department, and folks at the Center for Injury Research and Policy, which I can say more about, but I'll turn it over to Wendy for a second.
And I'd say what I'm really excited about the conference and even being part of the planning committee, it's just people who don't usually work together, coming together, talking, sharing their disciplines, and just really like, you know, learning from each other and trying to look at our typical content that we usually just talk about, you know, the same people with in a different way. And we're really excited about the abstracts that we've received. And you can really tell from the abstracts that they're embracing the vision that we have for it. So we're really excited about it. And to just have all these different people talking about injuries from different ways.
Thank you so much for that, guys. Yeah, I kind of buried the lead here for our listeners that I'm also involved in this conference project. And, you know, as Wendy said, it's so exciting to have people from, you know, public health, from history, myself, you know, from art history and the history of medicine, from literature, from all over the shop collaborating on this. It's been really, really fun so far. And yeah, reading the abstracts has been great. But bouncing off of something that you said, Wendy, I wanted to go ahead and dive into one of the things that I think is most exciting. And clearly, Wendy, you think this is exciting too. But I wanted to ask you to elaborate on exactly what kind of fields are being represented in this conference and why it's important to approach injuries from an interdisciplinary perspective. Like, why do we need to have all of these people talking to one another in this space?
Yeah, and so I would say, like, traditionally in injury prevention, you know, we kind of start with the epidemiology. We try to understand the patterns. You know, we develop an evidence base on what interventions work. And then, you know, we typically just implement those interventions and then write a paper about them. Hopefully people read it and pick it up and move forward. But I think it's kind of limited in that, you know, it doesn't do the breadth of what this group of people is hoping to do together. And that's really, you know, kind of understanding from a broader social perspective what influences injuries and really trying to, you know, understand how they affect families in ways that are like just more breadth than when we're just doing the traditional public health approach looking at injuries. So that's my take on it. But of course, I'm dying to hear how Alex responds to that too.
I mean, I'm essentially in agreement. I think that the thing that this conference will bring to the table is it really is going to try to integrate sort of material approaches to injuries, how they happen, what they do to people, and sort of how those then affect communities, and more sort of like social and cultural approaches, ways of thinking about the way that people understand what an injury is, how people think about risk, how people think about what disability means in a community or how it's represented, right? So I think that obviously public health practitioners and people in medicine are well aware of all of these questions or problems. There's already a huge literature on social determinants of health and structural determinants of health, as well as, again, like questions of how society grapples with injury as a problem. But I think the value of this is that there can be some crosstalk between those disciplines about the way they think about those similar questions. And even just hopefully together generating new questions, things that can have both meaningful practical implications for public health intervention, as well as, you know, what do those public health interventions actually mean to people? Like, what is sort of their response to those things that are being applied in communities or in different sites to try and make people's lives healthier and safer? The other thing I would just say is, you know, we talked a little bit about the way that injury prevention itself sort of like conceives of itself and bounds itself. I think the same problem or the same sort of set of limitations appear if we look at other disciplines as well. When you talk to historians, like, you'll notice I keep saying accident over and over again, which is not a term that public health practitioners would typically embrace. That's because as a historian, I'm very focused on the continuities between sort of historical approaches to quote unquote accident prevention and modern injury control. And I think that a lot of the literature on safety within history sort of gets crystallized and coalesced around this idea of an accident, right? So it's just a very different framing. You can see the same thing in like trauma studies, thinking about trauma as a nexus that has physical harm as a major component, as well as psychological harm. We could talk about sociology and its sort of interest in risk as a framing. I think one of the things that this conference is really trying to do is to allow people to talk across very, very different sets of terminology, because these literatures do speak to one another and these research programs speak to each other, but it actually requires us to actually figure out how they speak to one another and that we are actually speaking the same language on some level to be able to actually move forward, I think.
I love that you mentioned disability studies, and this has me thinking, you know, I love the interdisciplinarity at stake here. I'm curious if there will be some harm reductionists who attend as observers or who submit abstracts and whatnot. Either way, I'm just excited for this.
Wendy, did you have something to add to that?
Yeah, I did. I felt like I should have started. I kind of failed as an injury researcher to start by saying injuries are the leading cause of death in the United States from ages 1 to 44. I'm sure a lot of your listeners might not be aware of that. And I think one problem with injuries, and, you know, Alex talked about, you know, we tried to transition away from using the word accidents. Injuries are things that we can study and then apply, you know, public health methods to reduce. But at the same time, like, we have a general lack of awareness of the burden, even among public health practitioners, I would say. And so I just wanted to kind of really kind of make sure the listeners are aware these are problems. And, you know, each injury that someone experiences, it's an experience for a family, for an individual, and for a community. And if we can, you know, kind of come together and try and figure out ways to communicate better so people are aware of the risks, so they can kind of, you know, work with the evidence base that we have to reduce them. That's really where we're hoping to go as a field broadly. And I'm hoping that more people working together, thinking differently, will help us get there.
Wendy, you literally read my mind, because I was literally going to ask why injury. So you bringing up that fact that they're the leading cause of death is, you know, spot on. But if you and or Alex could elaborate, you know, what can, you know, quote unquote, rethinking injuries tell us about the body and health? You know, how are injuries different from other lens of analysis like disease or and or disability?
I think one place where I would start is that I would actually draw probably more connections between the two than I would sort of separate them. I think there is more attention, both frankly within the historical literature as well as in the public health literature, to chronic disease or infectious disease than there is to injury as a problem, at least in certainly a historical perspective, I'd say probably up to now. And I think that, like, really one of the things that people have been very attentive to in other contexts is the way that, like, a disease has both short-term effects on people's lives, but also has these, like, sort of longer-term ramifications. This definitely comes out of, Antoine, of your work on HIV/AIDS talks about, like long-term community impacts of infectious disease, as well as, like, sort of the long-term disease burden that folks who have HIV/AIDS sort of carry with them. I think there's a similar question with injuries. Many of them, you know, will end in a relatively quick hospital visit, or maybe, you know, you grab your first aid kit and patch yourself up. But there are also a huge number that leave not just sort of physical scars, you know, broken bones, permanent disability, anything like that, but also psychological scars. I think that sort of thing is part of the reason why we're trying to engage directly with disability studies and trying to engage directly with trauma studies. There are ways of thinking about sort of the long-term mental and affective dimensions of injury that I think are important or thought about very differently in some fields than in others.
You know, I would just add that, I mean, one other way to think of it is there's, like, long-term, even financial consequences for an individual or for a family. And we really, as an injury field, we haven't really gone as far as I'd like to have gone with this. But, you know, if you lose a parent, you know, to an injury, how does that affect your family long-term, you know, emotionally and financially? And with the disability studies, we have a whole line of work in our injury center of people helping people post-trauma, getting people back to work and giving them the support they need to do that. So there's also, you know, a science and evidence base about how to do that well. And it's just another dimension to consider as well.
That's great. Thank you. And I really appreciate, Alex, you saying physical scars as well as psychological scars. And I think, you know, going back to this idea of bringing in people from lots of different fields, like the arts side of things for this conference, which, you know, I'm involved in looking at injuries in visual art and in literature and in performance, that's one of those ways that those psychological scars can be represented and understood and analyzed by scholars. And so I think that's another answer to that earlier question about why it's important to have people from different fields conversing on this topic. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. And I love that, according to the CFP that you three give Chrissy some credit to.
Hold on. More than three. There are a lot of people.
You three plus three et al. I don't want to leave out your co-conveners. Shout out to everybody who had a hand in putting this conference together. But according to the CFP, you know, the conference is divided into four themes, perception, control, representation, and experience. Could you tell us why you chose those four themes and what they mean and, you know, projected outcomes for people following these themes?
Yeah, happy to at least start us off. The themes are designed to be cross-cutting and to be things that could be approached from all these different fields, right? If we'd sort of bounded either the subject matter of the conference in a different way or tried to pick themes that spoke only to, you know, say historians or sociologists or folks in injury prevention, it would basically have prevented, I think, the ability to sort of really actually share methodological approaches to similar questions. People think about perception of injury or perception of risk in all of these fields, but think about them again in very different ways. So part of the goal is to invite people to actually speak across those boundaries. And in terms of like what we're really trying to get in each panel and in the conference as a whole, we'd really like a mix of sort of theoretical, empirical, and sort of applied ways of thinking about injury. So, you know, on the one hand, how do we think about injury in sort of a broad way, like almost like as a philosophical construct? How do we think about it as something that can be understood in historical context or in sociological context, where we can actually map the realities of injury, past and present, and potentially future? But then also applied, what are people actually then doing about injury burden? And this is where, you know, we've got folks who've submitted CFPs from public health, from nursing, practicing physicians. We're really hoping to bring all of those groups together in a meaningful way. To circle back to the actual themes themselves. So in terms of perception, one of the things that we're really hoping to think about there is how different folks interpret risks within specific contexts. That means both geographical, so within a given country or between communities, but then also across different countries, how people understand what risk is. And I think part of the question there is, when and why do people either recognize risk, miss or overlook risk, avoid risk, or seek it out, right? We could take, for example, the disparity between people having hesitancy about flying because they sort of perceive there to be a risk that, at least compared to other modes of transit, really is not sort of empirically borne out, versus people choosing even now in the midst of a lot of information about traumatic brain injury to play football, right? I love football. I'm just going to say that as a caveat to this response, but there's a lot of evidence showing that football is an extremely dangerous sport and one that has a lot of like downstream health consequences for folks. And yet people continue to sort of not just play football and to enjoy it, but almost sort of fetishize the violence around football. In terms of control, this is really Wendy's wheelhouse, so we'll sort of defer to her on sort of more information. But this includes things like injury prevention countermeasures, things like fail-safe engineering, or trying to make sure, like for example, a hair dryer, if you drop it in the sink, isn't going to electrocute you. But it also includes things like emergency response or rehabilitation, and this is something that Wendy gestured towards a little bit earlier. Things like occupational therapy or nursing practice to basically get people who have already had an injury sort of back up to speed. Representation, I'll defer to Christy, but lots we can say there about different sort of genres through which people represent injury, as well as the styles or artistic tropes or motifs that people use to represent both injury as a thing that happens, but also as something that leaves certain kinds of effects, experience. We'd like to think a lot about the ways that people live with injuries, both as individuals, but also, again, as collectives or communities. You know, an injury isn't, as Wendy said, something that just stops with the person who experiences it. That experience is then sort of carried over to their immediate networks, whether that be friends, family, coworkers, and those sort of broader experiences matter as well as you know, just what happens to a single person. Although that also obviously is critical.
Wendy, did you want to say anything else about control there?
You know, basically injury control is, you know, the idea of kind of understanding how injuries happen and then trying to develop countermeasures to reduce them. And I think we have a great science base now of how to do that, you know, looking at the epidemiology. It's a lot of what I do in my job, you know, reading narratives about how injuries happen, to talking to people to develop countermeasures to reduce them. But there's individual level and then there's policy ways. And I'm kind of, you know, the further I get along, I'm much more interested in the policy approaches that, you know, affect change at the population level. For easy example is, you know, we saved a lot of lives by getting airbags in cars. And so it's a lot easier to have the airbag in the car than to make sure every single person who's riding in the car puts their seatbelt on every single time. And so there's different ways to control injuries, and some of them have larger effects than others. But again, I think this conference is going to give us an opportunity to talk with people who approach it differently. And I think for, as an injury researcher, for me to listen and learn from people who are using different approaches in terms of, you know, how we might encourage people to change their behaviors, like how we might approach control differently.
Thank you for that. And then on the representation side, and to be clear again, and to reiterate what Alex said earlier, these are not siphoned categories. These are all, you know, to use Alex's word, cross-cutting. Like there are going to be papers that apply to all four of these kind of arbitrary groups that we've made. But it's really, I think, useful to think about them in these four different groups. no, not four different groups, four connected groups, I guess. But on the representation side of things, you know, there's always this question of, and I just did this with my students a couple of weeks ago, of like how to represent pain, and is pain really ultimately unrepresentable, and injuries fall into that kind of conundrum a lot of the time as well. And so, you know, literature can do some things to represent the experience of injuries that art can't, and vice versa. And we'll be looking at things from like pastel drawings of, you know, First World War facial injuries, and like, what did that actually do for the surgeons? Or were they just artistic representations of injuries? Or, you know, even the use of in contemporary performance art, you know, when some artists have knives or guns out and like ask audience members to use them on their own body, like what does it do when artists are inviting injury onto themselves as part of performance art? Like, what does that make injury as performance? And so you've got these kind of really interesting ways of thinking through cultural representations of injury. And, you know, to echo what's already been said, we're really excited about a lot of the abstracts that we've gotten so far.
Alex, earlier you mentioned the Society for the Social History of Medicine. And so I was curious, you know, that being across the pond, Christy getting her PhD from across the pond, have you received any international CFPs at the moment?
Interestingly, about a third of our submissions are not from the States. So we've got a bunch of people who are applying from the UK and from continental Europe. We have some folks who've been applying from West Africa. We have a couple people from South Asia who have submitted abstracts. This is shaping up to be a meaningfully, not just interdisciplinary, but sort of like intercontinental conference. And I think that gives us a lot of space to grow the field, and really to think about comparative approaches that would otherwise be missing from the way that we think about injury. I am a parochial Americanist by training and by trade, but something like injury has to be something that we think about, not just in the States, but in the States and many other places, and think about them moving from both directions, not just sort of U.S. and the world.
You know, it's a global problem. And it's really exciting that we have a global response to the request for abstracts. And, you know, like, I, you know, not to repeat myself, but, you know, it's the leading cause of death in the United States for like a large swath, but it's even a larger cause of death globally, especially when you go into, you know, countries that haven't, you know, had the benefit we had of their road design and their cars. And there's a lot of, you know, just structural issues that put other countries more at risk than the United States. And the United States is more at risk than some European countries in terms of risk perspectives. And so it'll be great to have a whole group of people who are ahead of us and behind us on the continuum to come together and really share what's working.
You said something that really interested me that, you know, might surprise some people, but maybe it shouldn't, that the U.S. in a lot of ways is more at risk than other countries globally for injuries and perhaps less prepared for injury prevention than other countries. Could you say a little bit more about that and like maybe give some examples for folks?
Yeah, I certainly can. So specifically what I was talking about was road safety. And so we are well behind some of our European colleagues in terms of how we approach road safety. And basically there's like a way to look at road safety, which is, you know, it's kind of called the road to zero approach or vision zero, where you're really making a commitment to have as few road injuries as possible. It was began in Sweden and it's just really taken off in different countries, but they've just completely flipped the way they look at road transportation injuries, where they've decided they're just going to eliminate behavioral issues. And they've redesigned their roads to make it so you can make an individual behavioral mistake by speeding or driving under the influence, maybe, and you're not going to die from that because of the way they've designed their roads. And we're way behind in our approach to that. We luckily have a new infrastructure bill that came out with the Biden administration. Our injury center was, you know, had a convening beforehand to really try to be part of the conversation on how that was designed. But it's really, you know, there's a lot of money on the table right now to redesign our roads and really dig into our infrastructure with the Safe Streets for All grant. And so that's one way that we're way behind. And we're hoping that we, you know, move forward. I mean, obviously another way that we're way ahead is with gun violence. Like there's no country like ours in terms of gun violence. And so, you know, other countries just don't allow guns in the population the way that we do. I'm personally, my work is mostly focused around the prevention of injuries in the home. And you can see, like, when I work with colleagues in Australia or New Zealand or in the United Kingdom, they have a socialized approach to medicine and to housing. And so they're able to, you know, implement the evidence base in a much more systematic way than we are. So I'm always trying to find partners who are going into homes to implement, you know, put up smoke alarms or put up safety locks for kids can't get into dangerous things, but they can do that in whole apartment complexes in the United Kingdom in the way that we can. So I think we're like at the forefront in terms of our trauma care. And, you know, we really are the ones who design the trauma systems the way they work. So we're great at treating people, but we're not as far out front as we like to think we are in terms of road safety, definitely not with terms of gun violence, and even not with the prevention of injuries.
Thank you for that elaboration, Wendy. I have a selfish question to ask because, you know, recently I just finished co-convening a conference in Baltimore called the RACE Conference, abbreviated for Reparative Arts and Community Engagement. It was very time consuming, but it was also worth every minute was worth it. But it took a lot of work, and we've been going back and forth recently on whether or not we want this to be an annual or a biannual or just leave it be after that one time. I'm curious if you, at this stage, your conference hasn't even happened yet. We still have, what, 5 months? But I'm curious if y'all are thinking, if there's thoughts about bringing this conference up again sometime in the near future.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about it yet, but Alex might have a better sense of it than me. But the conference really comes out of a previous, much smaller convening that we did that Alex was the lead of. And so I feel like we are on number two in a very small way. And so, you know, and there was after that convening that we did, that's how we got here with wanting something even larger. And so I don't think that we're going to get all the answers when we come together in March, but I think it's going to be a great start. But Alex, I'll let you add more.
Yeah, I think we don't have firm plans yet, but plans are made to be made. So we'll see what happens and sort of how the conference goes and sort of what degree of buy-in, like longer term buy-in we get from the people who participate. But I think that really the goal of the conference is not for this to be a one-off. Everyone sort of has a great time, learns a lot, and then and this sort of goes their separate ways. We're really hoping that this will be sort of the foundation for longer term, systematic, sustained collaboration. And Christy earlier had asked about the Injury Studies Research Network. This is an informal group of folks who work together. It currently includes about 20 to 30 investigators from mostly the UK, Europe, and the US. But these are folks who are already doing this kind of work and doing it a little bit more frequently. I'm the main coordinator for the network. But the goal is that we're going to basically be able to take this conference as both sort of the first full dress coming out party for this network, as well as a place to begin to do other events and other kinds of collaborations moving forward. These are going to include, hopefully, we're hoping to put together an undergraduate like course sequence tied to injury studies. So like a year long, you know, two semester thing where basically students from a bunch of different fields, whether that be engineering, people who might care a lot about things like creating safe products might be interested in taking this class, or creating safe infrastructure if you're thinking about roadways or electrical networks, something that can appeal to people in health humanities or medical humanities more broadly, or just people who study injury or health from the lens of these different humanistic disciplines, as well as bringing in public health folks. And I think one thing that would be hopefully powerful about this module is, while we're initially imagining it as an undergraduate course, I personally have aspirations to, once we've tried it, deployed it, seen what works and what doesn't, and really tried to build this kind of interdisciplinary curriculum, ideally we'd then be able to sort of move across levels. So have, for example, like masters of public health students take it, or folks in medical school, if they're interested in doing emergency medicine, take it. We already have, like, I think, a fairly strong collaboration here at Hopkins between the Center for Injury Research and Policy and folks both with the Center for Medical Humanities and the History of Medicine Department. Right now, we're in the process of trying to rope in more folks from the University of Michigan's Injury Prevention Center. There are a lot of both connections we can make and draw in to this collaboration, and I think more things to do. The other thing I just say very briefly about another plan that we have right up front is this conference is going to be a way to move into making the case for injury studies research agenda essay. The idea for this is that because everyone has been everyone in all these different fields have been approaching the question of injuries or the problem of injuries using different terminology, using different methods, and only occasionally interfacing with one another, One thing that the conference organizers are hoping to do is to basically put forth like a basically a vision of like, where have we been? Like what has trauma studies added to something that could be called injury studies? You know, what has injury prevention added to this, to the same vector? What has history added? And then how do we take where we are right now in sort of lit review fashion and then project it forward? What would it look like to have like teams of people that had people from the humanities, from the social sciences, and from medical practice working together to basically try and both come up with research questions, but then to enact them. So I think if we want to make this a sustainable research program and one that can actually sort of respond to injury and give it sort of the attention it deserves, given how serious of a thing it is, both as a public health problem, but as just like an individual felt as well, we need to basically come up with a plan. And the idea is that this conference will be the way to start working out the plan that we can then hopefully get more people drawn into.
And yeah, and I'm so excited about this, you know, research agenda essay. I think it's a really important thing to do to, you know, sketch out the framework for moving forward. And one of the things that I keep thinking about is how, you know, the way that I've been conceiving of injury studies is kind of the same way that disability studies has arisen in, you know, the last several decades, the way that that is such an interdisciplinary and such an important field of study that is very much accepted as a vital and dynamic field of study now. And so the way that I've been thinking about it is kind of using that as a blueprint for thinking about how to make the case for injury studies is to also think about, okay, how has that happened within the world of disability studies? How can we see it in law, in practice, in the health humanities? And what do we gain from having all of these people, as you said earlier, Alex, speaking the same language to one another? And I think disability studies has done that really, really effectively. And I hope that we can do something similar.
Alex, you were involved as a co-editor for Tendon, the Center for Medical Humanities and Social Medicine's Art and Literature magazine for the special topic of injuries. Could you tell us what that was like and what kind of work is included in this issue?
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer. And I'm very excited about this as well. So this was something else that came out of this collaboration with the Injury Studies Research Network and also was in collaboration with the Center for Medical Humanities and Social Medicine. And we sort of imagined it as being something that could both be a companion piece to the conference, as well as sort of an autonomous sort of artistic representations of injury in its own right. We're also we're hoping to actually invite artists to come as well to the event. We're currently in the process of figuring out logistics for having gallery sessions during the lunch breaks, basically, so artists can actually display their work on injury or representation of injury as a part of the programming. So in addition to sort of like panels, we're hoping to have like an interactive visual arts component sort of directly integrated as well. In terms of the Tendon issue specifically, the section I was co-editing was Critical Perspectives, which is basically like Tendon's genre for sort of like in-depth scholarly treatments of injury. And there were some fantastic pieces there. There's a piece on the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act and sort of its history and its relationship to medical care and sort of the long durée of mid-century U.S. Also had some interesting work on prison fire camps. So in places like California or in Arizona, incarcerated folks basically being deputized, hired, enabled, whatever word you want to use for it, to basically go out into communities and combat fires and all the risks attendant to that and sort of the conflict between having folks who are perceived to be a quote-unquote threat to a community also being sort of essential to its safety. So a lot of interesting tensions there. And also a great piece on like the accessibility of subway infrastructure in New York, both like disability access, but also thinking about like the ways that infrastructure is or is not built for certain kinds of people or does or does not invite certain kinds of risk, just like going up and down the stairs when there aren't any elevators, for example. There's a bunch of stuff on visual arts. So you can see people's actual representations of what injury is or means to them. Some fantastic poetry. There's also fiction and creative nonfiction. And we have, like, again, much like the conference, a pretty wide range of contributors for that issue. There are some folks who are practicing medical doctors, one of whom basically wrote about their experience actually in like an emergency room clinic and sort of their reactions to someone who was dealing with a gunshot wound. A lot of really interesting pieces in this issue. And I think as a broader plug for Tendon specifically, every year they have a different sort of a different major theme. And they really are trying to attract a wide array of different artistic or literary understandings of medicine and health. So we definitely encourage people who are listening to this podcast to, if you've got anything or have thoughts for any given issue, definitely submit. It's a great editing team. Really can't say enough. One of the collaborators for the conference, Eero, is one of the sort of the major consistent co-editors, not a guest editor like me. And I really can't say enough about what they've been able to do with the magazine. And I think it has a very bright future ahead of it.
Thank you for that. Yeah, we love a plug for Tendon.
And can you share more with us, what is the Johns Hopkins University Center for Injury Research and Policy, and say a bit more about what folks do over there?
Yeah, so the Center for Injury Research and Policy, it formerly lives in the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, but it's really, it's a collection of investigators from across the university, from all the different departments at the School of Public Health, as well as we have co-investigators at the School of Medicine, the Department of History and Medicine, and the School of Nursing. And it's all people who, within their work, are committed to preventing intentional or unintentional injuries. So all people coming together, and we have really different skill sets. It's really great because, you know, there's always someone as part of our core faculty who you can be like, oh, I need help with, you know, this. I need help with, you know, getting what I'm doing into the clinical space, and there's someone to help with that. I need help with understanding the economics of this injury prevention, you know, evidence. And there's someone who can help you with everything that needs to be done with the core faculty at the Injury Center. I should also say we're the first and the oldest injury center. We were the first one. And Sue Baker was kind of the founder of the science of injury prevention. And she was our first director. And we're hoping she attends the conference. We know she'll be there in spirit at the very least, but she's still, you know, still with us and giving us reviews on manuscripts and giving us her, some of her thoughts about the conference. And so we feel really lucky to be historically the first and probably one of the biggest and definitely one of the longest serving. There's 9 altogether that are funded by the CDC injury section of the CDC, and we're one of the 9 that's funded right now.
That's great. Thank you so much, Wendy. So we've heard so much about both of your work, especially as it relates to the conference, but could both of you tell us how you actually started to become interested in studying injuries? You know, you've definitely convinced us and hopefully our listeners as well as to the importance of studying injuries, but how did each of you individually end up here?
I came to do my Master's of Public Health at the Bloomberg School of Public Health before it was actually called the Bloomberg School of Health a long time ago. And it was really, for me, like just taking some classes and just feeling like, wow, that's cool. Like they're, you know, they're using car seats there. They're putting airbags in. It just felt like a much more efficient way to address a health concern than at the individual behavioral level. And so I was kind of just immediately struck by, wow, we can really fix that, you know, if we, you know, use this countermeasure. It hasn't proven to be so easy as I thought maybe when I took those classes. But I'm still really drawn to the engineering and environmental approaches to reduce injuries. And I feel like it's just got to be easier to use policy, engineering, and changing the environment rather than trying to make changes one person at a time. And so that's what I came to it for, and that's what I really still like about it.
Yeah, I think I came at things from obviously a very different angle, just because very different field. But my previous work before I started working on home injury and home safety was on infectious disease control in the home, and I was really interested in connections between housework and gender, the space of the home, its material infrastructure, things like domestic technology, and then how people basically dealt with and sort of mitigated risk. And one thing that I noticed as I was sort of trying to settle on a dissertation topic was that, while that literature is fairly well developed in terms of communicable disease within the space of the home, it's pretty absent in terms of like home safety, that there's not a ton of historical literature on the way that safety plays out in the home, both because of this, as we've already mentioned, emphasis within the field on infectious and chronic disease, but also because the people who work on safety and history tend to mostly focus on workplace or transportation accidents, which are obviously still hugely important and need a bunch more study there. I think I would just like to see more people work on injury generally in history. But I think that those cross pressures in terms of like where the literature is just meant that home safety is a space that there hasn't been a lot done. And it's something that strikes me as both very important for thinking about the way that people deal with health in the home and deal with sort of risk in the home, but also like it's sort of directly relates to the way that modern science and technology have affected the space of the home and the way that it operates, and also the labor that then people have to carry out. And I think that one thing that Wendy has gestured towards a little bit is that, at least in my own research, one thing I'm pretty concerned with is the way that safety as a practice, like trying to stay safe at home, tends to have unequal health effects and tends to basically mean that not only is the burden of injury unequal across race, class, gender, geography, disability status, any and all of those things, but also the burden of the actual labor to stay safe is similarly distributed. You know, if you're a woman at home, especially in like the mid-century US, you have a lot more to do to stay safe as both a buyer and as someone who's actually going to have to do cooking, cleaning, and childcare than you would if you're someone who's gendered as a man, right? Or similarly, same issue if you're talking about low income versus high income, and that gap persists up to the present. You're much more likely to have an injury at home and to have a serious injury at home if you're at the bottom quintile of the income ladder than if you're at the top.
Thank you both for elaborating on how you came to this research, or rather how it came to you. So one thing that we do, we work on getting definitions of the medical humanities from all of our interviewees, but this conference also engages with social medicine. So how would you define both the medical humanities and social medicine and how they intersect with one another?
Yeah, I think for me, kind of the term that I identify more with is like social medicine of those two terms. And I would say it's the way it kind of, in my field, it's really trying to understand those structural issues that put some people more at risk for injury than others. And there's just a lot of examples. And we've really been able to demonstrate even through the literature that, you know, people who live in lower income houses, they're more at risk for being injured in their home than people who live in houses that are newer and the families have more resources. And just a real simple example of that, I do a lot of work around the prevention of scald burns. We have a device in our houses, which, you know, we all really appreciate when we want a hot shower, the hot water heater, but it is a device that it can be deadly. And it's much more dangerous for a family who lives in a home that was built before 1980, when it's been mandated since then that all new homes have to have protective devices to keep you from having, you know, being burned by your hot water. And so just the age of the house that you're living in is putting you at greater risk. And then, you know, people who live in rental apartments are more likely to have a landlord who might put a water heater that's too small in for them in one of these properties where they don't have protection. And so understanding things like that is, to me, like really like getting away from, oh, like, why wasn't that mom watching her child when they got burned in the bathtub? But really saying, like, why is that person who has a lot of kids, has a lot going on in their life, why are they being asked to like watch everything that they might not even be aware of is risky at their home? And so to me, that social medicine is trying to take a step back and understand the broader context that people are living in, and trying to like figure out ways to take that responsibility off of that maybe overburdened mom who lives in that house with less resources.
I definitely second all of that. And despite having an English background, I'm going to cheat a little. Instead of defining medical humanities by what it is, I'm going to define it by what it does, or what I think it does. So I think, one, it's a way of applying humanistic methods to broaden medical training beyond the physical sciences. And I think, secondly, it's a way of placing medical theory and practice in a specific set of social, cultural, and historical contexts. And those contexts, I think, as all of Wendy's responses have already gestured towards, are critical for understanding why injury happens, why health and disease happen in certain ways, who they affect, and why. In terms of like skills that I think that medical humanities brings to the table, as a plug for medical humanities writ large, you know, things like close reading, interpersonal communication, visual analysis, being able to like really critically create research questions and then ask like query databases or archives or whatever sort of set of documents or people or things you're looking at to try and get answers to questions. Professional communication, critical thinking. I think these are all critical parts of the enterprise of medical humanities and what it brings to medical training, public health training, or even just like training for the sciences. I think like, you know, I haven't talked as much today about engineers, but I think they're also a huge component of the way that we think about injury control and have a lot of really interesting and important things to say. And I think the other thing I would say is like in terms of like medical practice specifically, just like public health has to sort of think about the ways that that health and disease or injury unfold at the population level. That's also something that's really critical for clinical practice. Like if you're someone who's practicing in, you know, a city like Houston versus a city like San Diego, right, you're going to have an entirely different set of patients who have an entirely different sort of like a set of personal histories, as well as sort of structural and social factors within a given community. And so I think that, like, even if you're mostly just practicing one-on-one, like you're the person who sees the person who had a scald burn, who comes into the home, or whose child had a scald burn, you need to be able to sort of take those structural components of the way that communities are set up, and then be able to understand how that leads certain patients to come into the clinic, why they're coming into the clinic, and also what access or not they had to certain services to prevent that injury from happening or to prevent that medical problem from happening.
Bravo. Both of you. Yes. That was great. I really appreciated both of those answers so much. Mm-hmm. We've unfortunately come to the end of our time together in this interview. So our last question is just, what are you guys excited about working on in the future? You know, both individually, as a group. I mean, obviously as a group, you're excited. We mm-hmm. are excited about the conference. But beyond that, like, what are you guys pumped about working on in the next month, year, whatever?
Yeah, I guess along those lines, first order of business is I got to finish my dissertation and get a job. So if people are looking to hire, I will be available. I think the more serious answer is I'm currently working on an article on laundry technologies and laundry safety in the mid-20th century U.S. that I'm hoping will be out sometime in the next several months. I'm also working on a project on epidemiological approaches to injuries and accidents in the mid-20th century U.S. that hopefully will be on its way in the somewhat longer-term future. After my defense, I think some things I'm really interested in looking more into that I haven't had a bunch of time to think about during the dissertation is community activism around injuries. I'd really love to look at Rust Belt cities, places like Baltimore, and see how grassroots activists who are interested in things like aging housing, aging infrastructure, have sort of dealt with injury burdens in historical perspective as well as up to the present. I'd also like to think a little bit more about child protection as a specific site of injury, but also something that goes beyond injury. So would love to think a little bit more about how people sort of frame what child protection is, sort of how the idea of childhood becomes sort of like wrapped up in questions of safety, and even how that sort of affects things like trade agreements. So there's a lot of concern in like the 70s and 80s over basically like cheap imports from East and Southeast Asia coming in and that being a risk to children. And so I'd love to sort of like analyze that set of discourses as a way also of broadening my own perspective from the U.S. to sort of, you know, actually talking about international connections over the problem of injury. Last thing I'll say is just, again, for those who are interested in this conference, for those interested in the work that I, Wendy, Christy, a bunch of other people are doing right now, for those who might want to join the Injury Studies Research Network, this is a very open door policy. So, you know, you can reach out to me directly at aperry2, P-A-R-R-Y, at jhmi.edu. If you send me an email, I'm happy to add you to our listserv and would love to just meet more people who are working on these issues. Obviously, my exposure is mostly through either public health folks or through history folks. So if you're working on those things in other fields especially, really encourage folks to reach out and also to attend the conference, which will be a great chance to see a little bit more of the kind of work that we're doing.
I'm excited about all that stuff that Alex is doing. You got to graduate so you can get to do it all, Alex. I'm excited for you. And I guess a couple of things I'm excited about. Something new for our injury center is we have a new partnership with Dene College, which is a community college on Navajo Nation. And what we're doing with them is we're embedding some injury content into their public health curriculum. And so it's been really great. We had our first guest lecture last week and just, you know, a whole conversation with the students there about, you know, how they see injuries in their life and how they see them in their community. It's just like a new, exciting opportunity. And it just, so such a great opportunity for me to hear from them about what their concerns are. So that's new and that's funded by the CDC as a mentoring project from our injury center. So I'm real excited about that. The other thing I really just kind of like trying to, you know, commit to really keeping at understanding these structural issues more. And I've been doing some work with some public defenders and the Innocence Project, trying to really understand, you know, our tendency to, you know, really consider intentional injury maybe more quickly for certain populations than we do for others, and how that plays out not just in the clinical setting, but also in the legal setting. And so that's something that it's new to me. And it's, again, a different discipline working with lawyers, but it's been really rewarding. I've seen parents who are in this position where their child is injured. And one of the first things that happens, even though it was an intentional injury, is they lose custody of their children and they're automatically put on the defensive. I think it leads to a tendency for people to not seek medical care if they're worried that that's going to happen. So there's a lot of consequences that come from that. And so it's another thing that I am, you know, looking forward to spending more time in.
All of these projects sound fascinating.
Amazing.
Yeah. Really, really good. And, you know, we will link to as many as we can, as many of these sites and groups in our show notes so that folks who are listening can find these resources mm-hmm. fairly easily. Alex, I don't know if I'm officially on the listserv for the injury studies.
I think you are. I hope you are. Okay. If not, that can be changed immediately.
I was like, I don't know if I am. I mean, I obviously I'm doing the conference, but I'm like, am I on the
Yeah, list? I don't know if I am either. I must be though, right?
Like you definitely are. I know you are.
Yeah. How often does communication go out though, I guess?
It's sporadic, partially because I've been buried. That's
totally reasonable. Yeah.
Didn't mean to open a can of listserv worms there, but definitely add me if I'm not officially on it. I guess we can wrap up there. Do you want to send us out?
Yeah. Thank you both for a wonderful conversation, wonderful and informative. And very looking forward to the conference. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Is it March 7th to 9th?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, sweet, sweet, sweet. Well, see y'all there. Listeners, if you can, please make it there. Meet us, beat us there. Don't meet us there. And have a wonderful day.